Hello to Norway, the radio show from international students. I am your host today, Stella, and I have my nice colleagues with me, Sigrun.
Hi.
And Bastian.
Hi.
So today we will start also with our rubric News from the World. But we also want to talk about Amateurkulturrat, which is like an organization here in Bergen. And also, Sigrun, you prepared something for us, like a little surprise.
Yes, a Norwegian kind of surprise. introduction to Norwegian culture. Maybe you know some of it, maybe you don't.
Yes.
So we will see what you know.
Sounds intriguing.
Nice.
Hi, this is Bastian from Germany, and you're listening to Norway.
Now we want to talk about our rubric, News from the World. Sigrun, what happened in Norway?
Many things are happening in Norway, but probably the biggest thing is that, not the biggest thing, but one of the biggest things is that we are changing our physical paper money to another motive on them. So now it's, I think it was 1 year ago, we changed the 200 kroner bill, and now we are changing the 550 kroners. So you have to be before October 18th, you have to use them in a shop or go to your bank and what is it called when you get another type of money back? It's called
exchange.
That's the correct word.
So you really cannot use them after that?
No,
are they really strict with this?
Yeah, you can't use them, but I think you can maybe go to your bank and change them for 10 years. The Norwegian bank will accept your bills for 10 years. But then you have to either put them inside your account or you will get the money back. But then you can't go to your normal bank. You have to go to the Norwegian bank. So they really are encouraging people to use them. And then you won't get the old bills back. You will get a new bill back. And we are changing from, as long as I've lived, we have had people on our money.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And now we are having other motives like fish. And
yeah,
we're having a stavkirke. It's old Norwegian churches.
Yeah, sure. There's one near Fantoft, right?
Yeah.
Looks beautiful.
That's what we're changing it to. So not any people, but other motives.
Actually, I didn't use that much cash, of course, when coming to Norway, as many of our listeners can attest to. It's not really necessary. But once I got, I think, some 200 kroner bills, and they have a very nice layout, in my opinion, at least. I mean, maybe it's a little bit hit over the head, but like the big card in the foreground, as like this, like also in historical terms, very important commodity, you could say, right?
Yeah.
For the Norwegian economy for centuries. And one of the big reasons that Norway as a country even exists, as far as I know, as far as I can remember in my history classes. So I really like the redesign. They're doing a great job. Even though it probably has some limited practicality.
And they are harder to counterfeit. That's why they're changing the money. So it's a thing that's happening in Norway. So it's it's good if you have some 500 or 50 kroner bills laying at home. Try to use them before October 18th.
Yeah. Okay. Do you remember the time when the Germans or the German government changed into like the euros? 2002, I think it was, right?
Yeah, 2002. Not really good.
Yeah.
I mean, I was just in primary school. I remember that when they changed it before, I was in first class when we had like mark, the old money. And I got, I think, 1 mark per week.
Mm.
And after that, I only got 50 cents per week. And I was like, because the euro
has more value.
Yeah. But I didn't understand that as a child in primary school, and I was so disappointed that my mom don't give me a euro.
Yeah,
that's my only memory.
Yeah, I don't have that much more to add to that. I mean, I was a little bit older than you, I think, but still, yeah. I remember bringing the cash to the bank, and then them like, they gave us, I think the main exchange period was a couple of months, I think, like from January to March or something. But still, I think the bank, like in the case of Norway, they accepted the old Deutsche Mark bills for quite a long time.
Yeah, yeah, I think so. Yeah.
But it's a big change to change big. Your currency. We Absolutely. Are just changing how our money looks.
Absolutely.
You changed currency, so yes. you had to think in a different way, like you said. You thought that you got less, but you got the same value.
Yeah, yeah, that's true.
Yes. And I mean, like, the euros also get like exchanged from time to time with the same sort of reasons behind them, right? Now counterfeit money, and also to try to, like, make illegal organizations get rid of the cash that they already have because they're mostly cash-based. I mean, with the new... cryptocurrency and stuff like that, I think that's changing a little bit, but I think it's still a good idea in general to do that.
That's true.
Yes.
Okay, so now move on to Germany and news from Germany, which are really not that nice. Bastian, do you want to summarize it a little bit?
I mean, I might be the wrong guy to do it, actually.
And I add on.
Yeah, sure. Maybe we should do it this way. So I got to know of it yesterday. I think it happened during the day, right?
Yes.
So in Halle, which is in eastern Germany in the Bundesland called Sachsen-Anhalt, which is a nice university city. I don't know if anybody's ever
Wasn't
been
Wasn't that far from Leipzig?
That's
what they showed on the map in Norwegian news.
It's probably not too far away. I'm my mental map of Germany is a little bit lacking in that case. So they are neighboring Bundesländer. But it's in a different Bundesland, so
yeah, I think it was
relatively close.
Norwegians who don't know that
yes.
much about Germany to like, this is
Absolutely.
The general area.
So it's pretty
happening.
Much in the middle. If you have like a picture of Germany, it's right in the middle. Yeah, so there was this guy. By now, it's not completely sure if the suspect that they got after he did is really the guy, but whatever. Like, he went into a synagogue. On his way there, he started shooting on like normal people just walking around. And he went into the synagogue, killed two people, I think, right?
Yeah, I think
and
he didn't
injured.
Get into the synagogue because they had like a safety door. And that saved them. So he didn't get into it. And then because he was really frustrated about that, he shot a woman just somewhere on the street.
Yeah.
And then he got to a kebab store and shot a guy. So he wanted to get into the synagogue, but he didn't he didn't made it. And so he shot other people. And I'm not sure about the rest, but he also, I think today I read that they also found his car in a different place and that there was like bombing stuff in it.
Explosives
yeah,
in it.
Have to take care about it now.
Yes.
Yeah,
absolutely.
I heard that the one person he shot was a woman who was just getting off the tram. And I think he shot her in the leg or something, just like you said, because he was frustrated and she was just passing by. She was getting off the tram and she was really at the wrong place at the wrong time.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah, and I think he also tried to kill himself after this, but it didn't work. And now they got him, and probably they got him. And he also filmed himself while doing this. So it is like a comparison kind of to Christchurch.
Yeah.
And in this video, I haven't seen it because I don't want to see it. And I think it's good when media also don't show it because they just reproduce the attacker's motivation.
Yeah.
But I heard from other people who watched it that he was talking about anti-Semitism and racism and anti-feminism. So these were probably his motives.
Yeah. That's the part that is most comparable, I think, to Christchurch. I also didn't see the video. I just heard it through like secondary sources. But as far as I know, that guy or like there's a big online community like focused or like assembled around 4chan, one of the big platforms, right? They got like radicalized and they got like went into the extreme in many political ways. And like one of the foremost things is, of course, the anti-Semitism. like the criticism of New World Order and stuff like that, all of these conspiracy theories, you could say, and anti-feminism and a lot of these other things that you've mentioned are very much a part of that, because it's mostly about young males, frustrated males that that organize in these online forums. And I think also like taking note from some historical examples, masculinity also plays a huge role in many other fascist regimes or fascist ideologies. So I think that you cannot really look at all of these things separately. So you have to look at them as a sort of package.
So for this really special and sad situation, I prepared like a little comment. So we don't know much about the background of the attack, but what is clear from the previous findings is that we need to talk. We have to talk about anti-Semitism. We have to talk about racism at the same time. We have to talk about toxic masculinity at the same time, because all three mechanisms have ended deadly in Halle. Anti-Semitism is treated in Germany like a relic from the past. It is considered the hair of dark history, a legacy we have already overcome. In the majority society, anti-Semitism is no longer a problem of the modern age. And if it is addressed in the headlines, then it's an imported problem. The concept of Muslim anti-Semitism was created, implying that anti-Semitism is merely a problem of Islam, but no longer of German society. After the attack in Halle, the leader of the Christian Democrats spoke about it as an alarm signal. She omits that there were alarm signals long before. The Federal Criminal Police Office published figures according to which in 2018 about 90% of the anti-Semitic crimes of right-wing extremists were committed. Racism is part of the debate in Germany's society. However, he has become socially acceptable. Media use language of the right, using terms such as the wave of refugees, or refer to the alternative for Germany as a civil, as in the evening after the state elections in Saxony and Brandenburg. It has long since been fine to walk side by side with rights when it comes to rejecting refugees. Anders Breivik, the offender of Christchurch, and now the offender in Halle, have one thing in common. They were all men. This fact is simply ignored in the debates about terror attacks. Of course, there are also women as offenders, but the number is tiny compared to men. The reason for this is seen in toxic masculinity. The concept describes a predominant idea of masculinity in our society. Men should show no weakness. They should be tough, aggressive, and not tender or loving, certainly not with each other. Especially right-wing extremists characterize the toxic masculinity. So Björn Höcke demands, as a member of the Alternative for Germany, that one must again become male and defensive. And in his defensive speech, Breivik speaks in court that gender ideology has weakened Western men, and that the man is therefore no longer able to defend himself against the inviting migrants. Individually, these three mechanisms are already deadly to certain groups of people, like women, Jews, and people who are not red as white. Combined, they showed in the attack in Halle how structurally they are rooted in society. Let's talk finally about it, to show solidarity with those who are affected, and to proactively tackle these origins of violence.
Hi, this is Mathilde from France, and you're listening to No Way.
What's now following is a short interview with Amateur Kulturit. I recorded it before. We recorded it in like the office of the guy, so maybe the quality of the audio is not perfect, but I still hope you like it. Stella from the show No Way. Today I'm talking to Geir. He's part of the organization Amateur Kulturit in Bergen. I hope I pronounced it right. It's nice to meet you. We are sitting here in his office, so maybe the quality of the audio is not that perfect. So Geir, can you first tell us a little bit about yourself and how do you came to Amateur Kulturrådet?
Yeah, thank you for coming to visit Amateur Kulturrådet in Bergen. I started working here 4 years ago. It's a full-time job. And the idea behind Amateur Kulturrådet is that there's a lot of different culture going on in Bergen, and the Bergen Kommune made up a plan way back in 2007, where they thought that lots of attention in the society is definitely the professional culture, but there's so many people in Bergen, including students, that is doing some culture activity on their spare time. They sing in choirs, they dance, they play music, they collect veteran cars, they collect, it's a lot of things that people do. Some of them, they go into studies, dancing, other culture studies, and some of them also become professionals. And everyone who is a professional artist, they have a former time where they were amateurs. So there's a close link, and it's sometimes difficult to define if somebody is an amateur or is professional. Maybe you can make a living, an income of your performance for some years, and then you realize that, well, I have to have a so-called normal job. So you maybe work in a normal job, and then you still keep the activity as an amateur. So what is amateur's role is that it's sort of a union, you could say, for all those organizations, because they more or less need support maybe from the commune foundings for their activities. Maybe they need some more knowledge about how to get money, how to recruit new members, how to write an application. Yeah, so many different things. So, and today, about 11 years after we started, we have more than 300 members. And by members, I mean organizations. And in those organizations, very different how many members they have. A choir maybe have 40 people. We have everything from organizations with one people to organizations with 1,000 people. So,
oh, nice.
A lot of people in Bergen.
So, big pool of people who are doing some cultural stuff. Can you talk about some examples of these organizations?
Yeah.
What can I imagine?
Yeah, since you are from the student radio, it is a lot of organizations that primarily recruits from the students in Bergen. And we have, I know, where you are now in my office, we have some other rooms here where Kaleidoscope, which is a student choir for women, and I have a dance company called Terpishore, which I know is a student dance company. And we have, and then, of course, many students are not kind of into a direct students organization in culture, but they come to Bergen, or they are from Bergen and they have been part of a music band, or they play in a, or that they are members of whatever there is to offer in Bergen. So
okay, so you do not only have members from Bergen, you also have like internationals or from other parts
of
Norway.
It's very nice, and that has been increasing over the last years. This I cannot say that every country in the world has their cultural organization in Bergen, but many, if there are like more than, let's say, 10, 20, 30 people from, let's say, Mexico in Bergen, they often find them together and they kind of take care of their Mexican culture. It can be dancing, can be food, whatever.
So,
and
also
some of them,
international experiences here.
Yeah, so it's nice to have a And I have a dancing group from Chile,
mm-hmm.
in South America. We have, there's a big community of people from Latvia in Bergen. I think more than 1,000 people from Latvia live here. They have their own theater group. They have a choir. They have a dancing group. So it's very nice when there are some events and you can introduce Latvian dancing, because it's they are colorful clothes and they have it's nice to bring and hopefully we're not so good and I think it's also important that when people come from other countries and they want to stay in Bergen either for a couple of years to study or even settle down here after the studies, it's also important that they can go into traditional Norwegian organizations.
Okay, so you also want to keep the Norwegian traditions up and
mm-hmm.
don't want
mm-hmm.
to lose it.
Yeah, because I mean that a choir in Bergen, they can sing gospel music, which is worldwide, or other cultural aspects they touch into singing, maybe dance some dances that are originally from the Middle East or whatever. Mm-hmm. So I think, and I think it's a good way for a student to kind of be integrated in Norway or in Bergen to join some kind of Bergen mm-hmm. organization. Although it's also nice that people from Mexico go get together and mm-hmm. kind of have their culture.
Group. Yeah. Yeah. I guess, I mean, you mentioned before that you have like around 350 organizations. That is a lot of work. How do you manage it? Do you have a lot of volunteers or?
Yes, it's only me that it's employed here. So I had to think about, I can't not really go into every organization and give them a big help. So I'm trying to, I can't go out whenever they have a session or rehearsal or meeting, but I try to let they come here. Underneath my office here, there's a big room with a cafe, and I maybe 6 or 7 times a year I rent that room. It's something we call amateur night, amateur kulturkveld in Norwegian. And all the organizations that is member here, they get an invitation to join if they want to come. And there's a program, and usually the program is related to something that everyone more or less would like to have information about. And I invite guests to those amateur nights. So they can, for example, we had one 2-3 weeks ago, then it was natural to have an election night where I invited the politicians, mm-hmm. which is sort of responsible of culture in Bergen. So I put up a panel, and people could come and ask the politicians about what do you think of so on, should there be more money to the culture and whatever. But then, and so kind of more ordinary amateur culture night is like we bring in maybe the sponsor chief in one of the biggest bank, and we say that, how do you think and how do you process when people apply for funding?
Mm-hmm.
And this person can say that we look for this and that. And
okay, very useful for people who maybe want to get funded. Mm-hmm. Okay.
So hopefully, and it can be smaller issues as well. We can say that we can have recruitment, mm-hmm. and then we bring in maybe 1 or 2 persons. Mm-hmm. Maybe we can bring in someone who has a success. Maybe there's a student choir that has rise from 20 members to 50 members in 1 year, mm-hmm. and we think, oh, that's fantastic. How did they do that? Do they have any experience or tips or tricks to bring? Maybe it's things that other organizations haven't thought of. Maybe it's important to have a social pizza night, and maybe it's,
okay, so it's also about this network building and to help each other.
Then you can see in my office, we have some equipment here. We have loudspeakers, a little bit sound. We have projectors. So this, if you're a member here, you can come in here and book, and you can rent it for free. So that's quite popular. It's 3 or 4 times a week, organizations come in here and they say that we will have a small concert in a church, for example, or we will sing at the student center just to recruit people. So we need some loudspeakers, and then they can come and borrow and rent it for free.
Okay. So why do you think Bergen is a good place for this kind of organization here, or for a lot of cultural organizations?
I think way back then in 2007, there was a politician who said that it's important that all this kind of amateur culture has somebody who can speak for them.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's so many people, it's different to say how many people who in Bergen who kind of are into some cultural activity. That depends on how do you define it. If there's an old man collecting old boat engines, well, he's taking care of cultural history. Then there's choirs, then there's everything. So, and people go out and in, maybe they leave their choir when they are going to work, have children, but then maybe come back to the choir. They're finding a new choir when they are in the 40s. But still, if you ask a politician, or if you ask on a very basic level, why is it important that Bergen Kommune supports the volunteer and amateur cultural life? It's you could say that in the big picture, it's better if the Kommune supports a choir with 20,000 kroner a year, because that will gather like maybe 50 people to come together every Wednesday night for 3-4 hours. They sing, they have good fun. Maybe they go on a trip to to a choir festival and so on. And what would happen if that choir didn't exist? Maybe those 40, 50 persons would be at home watching TV, drink coffee. So there can be a good health in bringing people together and kind of have a project singing together. So I heard some figures that bringing one person into the hospital cost 12,000 NOK per day.
Wow.
So if somebody is depressed, have mental problems, it will cost the society or the tax we are paying 12,000 NOK a day. So it's good good money to just give 20,000 that 50 people can really have fun singing in a choir.
So I'm a student here in Bergen. How could I become a member? What would be the steps?
We don't really have single persons members. The members are all organizations. So then if you are into, I don't know, if you sing in a student choir or you are member of a stamp collecting club or you are, I don't know, you could check with your organization. Are we a member of the Amateur Culture Road? And if nobody knows, then you're probably not. You can also see at the website, because all of our members are in the website. Mm-hmm. You press on members and then there's categories. And if you are a choir, you can press on a choir and then you see a list of maybe 50 choirs, and if your name is not included, then you're probably not a member. But then just email me or call me, and then it's for free. It doesn't cost anything to be a member, and it's just only benefits. And hopefully also the organization would have some good stuff to learn how to develop their activity.
Okay. You already mentioned your website. How is it called? And do you also have a Facebook page or something?
Yes, it's amateurculture.no.
Oh, great.
Amateur with an O, not an Ø, which is a typical Norwegian, but amateurculture.no. So, unfortunately, it's only Norwegian, but you bring in a Norwegian person there where you could maybe use Google Translate. And we're also on Facebook, but the most facts information about us is on our website. Mm-hmm. The Facebook is what Facebook is good is to put on some events that we produce and so on.
Oh, nice. Okay, so one last question. Do you have plans for the future? Do you have some, like, I don't know, wishes for your amateur culture, or do you have like a big project in planning?
Well, we are I've been here for 4 years, and Amateur Cultural Road is next year 12 years old, and next year there's a big thing about Bergen, which maybe somebody has heard of this. Bergen as a city is celebrating 950 years, and what we've also been working with is that when Bergen have big events, this year there has been a big tall ship race in Bergen. So what we have said that is when Bergen hosts big international events or big celebrations, then through me or through the Amateur Cultural Road, I should put up some invitation that everyone who is doing cultural activity should be invited to join when Bergen has big events. So just right now we are planning some ideas, and I'm speaking to a lot of the organizations, come up with an idea and you can get some funding and you can join, because next year will be a big event when Bergen is celebrating 950 years.
Nice. So a lot of work to do till next year.
Yes, it is.
Okay. Thank you so much for the time and for this great talk. And
thank
have
you.
A nice
Hi, here's Stella, and you listen to our show, Norway.
And Sigrun, you prepared something for us.
Yes, as the Norwegian spice, as I like to call myself, we were the Spice Girls. I'm the Norwegian spice. You have to, among yourself, agree what kind of spice you are. That's
all
just
right,
what
okay.
I am. I was thinking that for you as exchange students or maybe other exchange students that are listening, it would be nice to have a little introduction of a Norwegian culture, or maybe like probably some weird Norwegian culture. So I've prepared some of them. I think you know some, maybe not all. And my first is that in Norwegian students, we don't say professor and then their last name. We say their first name to them, and even in emails, I would write my professor, if her name was Kari, I will say, "Hi, Kari, this is Sigrun. I have a question about the lecture." So you don't use their last name. I don't know what my last the last name of
But
many
do you don't use their title either?
No.
That's crazy.
I would cool. say if I was talking about them, maybe to you, I would say, "Oh, my professor in lecture today, we talked about this. She's a really nice professor."
Okay.
But if you were in my class and you knew who she was, I would use her first name.
I can actually relate to that maybe because I used to work for IKEA for like 8 months, I think, before I came here actually. So of course this is not Norwegian, but still it's Scandinavian enough, and they
it's probably the same
absolutely.
In Sweden.
Yes, so they taught us like on day one that we are practicing Swedish egalitarianism
yes.
here, and this is sort of like a business thing, right? So
yeah.
it's and in Germany it's different. It's getting to this, so it's a trend to be more informal and to have these egalitarian things going on, but it's still like I think it's against many of the people's intuitions that are working at IKEA just to call everybody by the first name, and also the customers greeting them with hi and like using the informal you and stuff like that. So yeah, whatever. Just to,
yeah. But I think in Germany, it's especially in university context, you really have differences because you have some profs who would be totally fine with this, but I can imagine about a lot of profs who would be really offended if you don't say their title,
yes.
because this is a really big thing in Germany that when you got a doctor or you're a professor, that it has to be named.
Yeah, because my German teacher in high school, he wanted us to call him Herr Speer. That's probably not very good Deutsch, actually. German, I'm sorry. And all of us were like, "No, I'm sorry, but your name is Florian. I'm not going to call you that." I don't really know the last name of many of my teachers through my school years. It's just something that we do.
Cool.
I asked some of the other people here on the radio what they wanted me to tell you, and that is like when you greet somebody in Norwegian, it's if you know them, you say "Namen, er det deg?" You don't say "Hi, how are you? Nice to meet you. How has your day been?" You say like "Namen," and then they say "Namen" back, and it's no but, just put together in one word, and it's we don't really say hi and ask how's your day been or are you doing okay. It's really hi, maybe a hi.
Oh wow. Do you know where this is coming from? Is this like a modern thing to do, or has this always been?
No, I feel like it's. I wouldn't say it to my teacher, but my friends and family and more informal. I wouldn't say to my boss. I would say hi. Then I would say hi, how are you? And they would say fine, and they would ask how I am. That's more of a formal. But even the bosses here in the radio, I would say "Namen." So it's you maybe say hi, but nothing else. And also, I don't know if you've been to any Norwegian people's houses.
Yes.
Yes.
Actually,
did you take your shoes off?
Yeah.
Because if you don't take your shoes off,
that's a big no-no.
Okay. Good to know. For next time.
You have to take your shoes off. And even if they say, oh, you can keep them on, that's just being nice.
Oh, okay.
They want you to take them off. That's just something you say. Even if you have an electrician or a plumber coming home to you, they will probably ask you, "Oh, do you want me to take my shoes off?" And you say, no, that's fine. It's so dirty here anyway.
Wow.
I'm going to clean tomorrow. But they know that.
It's just being polite.
Yeah, you have to take them off. And in Svalbard, Maybe you, because you've been to Iceland, Stella. Yeah.
Yes.
It's maybe the same there that you have to take your shoes off.
I haven't been to an Icelandic home, but yeah, in one hostel, we also had to do it there. This was like really crazy.
Yeah, because if you go to Svalbard, since it's almost always snow there, you have to take your shoes off if you go into also the homes, but if you live at a hotel, they probably want you to take, and there's signs. So if you're going to Iceland and you're not sure, it will be signs.
Yes.
But there are signs that please take your shoes off.
Mm-hmm. I think that makes a lot of
sense.
That's
mainly a hygienic purpose, and that's why always, and I think that's where it comes from in Norwegian as well.
Mm-hmm. That it's, do you wear slippers then at home?
No, some people do if it's cold, but that's mainly for the cold, not for...
Okay.
For the dirt or anything like that.
Yes.
My mom does.
Yeah. I brought my Birkenstocks from home. Birkenstock-esque, it's not
very
real.
Very German.
Yeah, exactly. So I just put them on and I walked through my student housing facility with it. And like the Norwegians always look at it. It's like, you're not Norwegian, are you?
Yeah, they will. I think that's you can do that. But if you're going into somebody's room... Mm-hmm. I would suggest that you take them off. But it's mainly a hygienic thing that you take your shoes off in the hall and you walk with socks or maybe slippers inside. So it's really that type of thing, very Norwegian.
I think it makes a lot of sense, especially in those regions where there's a lot of snow. And
true.
I guess you're also having some anti-snow measures, such as like salts or something like that.
Yeah.
Or, yeah, like the little stones or whatever. I wouldn't want to have those on my floor, especially like a wooden floor. I think it's getting ruined quite quickly by that.
And it's easier to just have it in the hallway.
In one contained area.
Yeah, we can clean it there.
Especially.
I have one quick more.
Yes.
Sure.
And that you've probably seen it if you're going to lectures, that Norwegians like to sit alone than with a group of people they don't know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And you've seen it on the
I
bus as well.
Mm-hmm.
That's very typical Norwegian. If you go on a bus in Norway and there are available seats, do not sit next to another person in the two row seats. You have to, the bus has to be completely empty of the two rows that are.
Yeah,
there has to be one in every.
And then
the
you're allowed to
maybe sit down and be like, oh, is it free here? Can I sit here? And they will say yes, and then you can sit down.
Yes. So, do you remember our discussion about my like tenants' union in my house? So I had this suspicion that this was going on because where I live, there are more Norwegians or much more Norwegians than many more Norwegians than international students, and I think you can feel that in that nobody really uses the common room, right? And then
nobody uses the common room in Norway.
Exactly. So it's only the only use case that we have for the common room is basically someone who is staying at our house, coming to the like booking the room, and then inviting all of their friends to the room to have like a vorspiel or whatever.
Yeah.
So that's a very common thing to do, but like just during the day or on any like if you want to have some company in the evening, that's not something that happens.
No, and it's not very nice of us to do it, but it's just and some people have been researching it, some scientists, and they think it's because of all the mountains that we are really used to being with our people or our kind of pack, our local community of very few people. So when we get to other people, we don't like to socialize with them.
Okay. Yeah, but I have this feeling, especially in public transportation, that Germans are similar because we also don't like other people sitting next to us, especially not strangers. Because when I was in Athens, I was studying there 2 years ago for 6 months, and they were all so close and sitting so close to each other. And also in the supermarket, they were like, really, I could feel the breath in my neck from the other person waiting in the line behind of me, because they are really like to stick together, like meeting new people. And I was... really feeling like a little bit weird about that, because I don't know it from Germany.
Yeah, absolutely. So I would always also say that this is a similar thing to German culture, but just a little more
Extreme?
Yeah, not maybe extreme is the wrong word, but more pronounced. Maybe.
Yeah, yeah. I can say extreme.
All right, okay.
No, but it's and that's just how it is. I've never gotten on a bus and sat next to another person if there were any other seats available. Sometimes I will even stand, even though there are seats available, but I don't want to sit next to anybody. Mm. So it's okay.
That actually, maybe if we have time, that reminds me of a small thing, because I've seen the movie at BIFF, the last movie of the film festival, called About Endlessness, I think, by Swedish director Roy Anderson. And he has I think it's a funny scene, but it's mainly like an awkward scene with someone sitting, or like a group of people sitting in a bus. And in the front row, there's a man just crying completely uncontrollably. And it's like having the worst day of his life. And everybody around him is just like, oh, this is uncomfortable. Yeah. Nobody wants to comfort him or something. It's just everybody looking around, scrolling through their like smartphones and stuff. So, I don't know. Yeah, so that sort of figures. Yeah.
That could happen in Norway as well. Maybe the bus driver would ask,
say something, right? Yeah.
Are you doing okay? Yeah. Do you want any help? Can
but
I
must
help
be
you?
A really nice bus driver, then.
Yeah,
and empathic.
Yeah,
one.
Yeah, and not a nice one. I could see many bus drivers in Norway not giving a damn. I'm sorry, but not asking, because they're like, that's not a part of my job. I'm sorry.
Yeah. That's true. Yeah, that was really nice.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think we learned a little bit more about Norway,
and
I hope you too.
Absolutely. It's good to hear that from a Norwegian as well, because we don't want to indulge in too many like stereotypical things. Yes,
I'm
exactly.
Here so you don't get those awkward in situations.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Hi, this is Varun from India, and you're listening to Norway.
So we are at the end of our show again.
Yes, very sad.
Unfortunately. Yeah.
We talked about news from the world, so that you are going to have new money in Norway.
Yes.
And about the attack in Germany, in Halle.
Yes.
We also listened to the interview with Amateurkulturet. And Sigrun gave us a 101 about Norway.
Yes, a little Norwegian culture introduction,
Absolutely.
I would call it.
So, yeah, it was really nice. Thanks that you were here and that you were my colleagues.
Oh, thank you for having us.
And, yeah, you can listen to us also as a podcast. You can find us on iTunes and Spotify. And we also have an Instagram and Facebook page. So just search for us, Norway. And we would like to follow us.
Yeah.
Yes, sure.
Or if you want to maybe say something to us, you can also reach out on
Absolutely.
The social media.
Of course.
Suggest topics, something that's on your mind.
Yeah, or a critique. We would like to get some feedback as
yeah.
well.
Maybe not negative critique.
Just positive feedback.
Yes.
Okay, so see you next week.
Yeah, see you. Bye-bye.
See you.